everybody. It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with Mark Resnicek. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Obviously, for those listening, Mark is the drummer for the Toadies. Toadies are a favorite among the Rowdy Alternative crowd, so this is going to be a fun one. And I guess before we jump into anything too much, man, just kind of let us know like where you're at right now. I know it's still kind of the beginning of the year. Things might start be getting busy, like with the tour, the album coming up. Just kind of let us know what you've been up to.
Yeah, we have the new album coming out May 1st. It's called The Charmer. Starting a couple days before that will be a tour that it goes till, so far it's booked out until about the middle of October. So I don't think all the dates have been announced yet, but yeah, we're gearing up to be real busy for pretty much the rest of the year. Really exciting. It's been a long time since we've had a studio album out, so
absolutely. Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're stoked.
Right on. Yeah, we'll make sure to dive into that here in a bit. But I want to ask you a few questions, and I don't want to ask you the same questions you heard a million times, so I'll try to stay away from those. But just a few here. Obviously, you guys, Texas band, you know, based out of Texas. Yep. We've had a lot of Texas artists, like a lot of current ones, up and comers, you know, people who've been playing a while. And the Texas scene, whether you want to look at it with the rock and roll scene, the metal scene, the country music scene, it's always been so like rich. It's always been very diverse too. A lot of genre blending too nowadays. I'm kind of curious on, has it always been that rich of a scene back to your guys' day to now? Has it changed at all, like from the way you see it? Can you kind of explain how that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been really diverse and strong. You know, when we started out early 90s, we were based in Fort Worth, still are, really. And so there was kind of separate little scenes like in Fort Worth and Dallas and Denton, but they all kind of, intermingled. And so we were friends, you know, with bands from all three towns, as well as Austin and Houston. And not just like rock bands, we knew people that played country music and rockabilly, some jazz bands, hip hop, and so on. So, yeah, I'm really happy to see that Texas music is still probably stronger than ever nowadays, you know?
Yeah. And Fort Worth, I feel like that has that always been just such a hotbed for talent. Like, I feel like that's like the spot out there.
Yeah, I guess it has, you know, like, even going way back to like, you know, the 1940s and stuff, Bob Wills hung around Fort Worth. I think Willie Nelson actually did a spell in Fort Worth as like a DJ. And there's, you know, it had a really vibrant blues scene way back in the day. And, yeah, when we were coming up, there was, a lot of bands from Fort Worth, that we were friends with, and had its own kind of scene going on over there. And I think if anything else, it's stronger than ever now, like Leon Bridges coming out of there. He got huge, you know? So yeah, it's maybe not as well known as like Austin or something, but it is a musical hotbed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope this isn't a cliche question, so bear with me here. But I've always viewed Toadies as like one of those like essential alternative rock bands of the 90s. Like that's like, in my opinion, like one of the ones for me. And is the alternative rock, like to me, that's kind of a broad, you know, like camp to put yourself in, I feel like, in any era. I'm kind of wondering, like, whether back then or now, like, is that the sound or the genre or the you know, the camp you would put you guys in, like the alternative rock? Is there another way you like to describe your guys' sound or style, like anything like that?
I guess that fits, you know, like even though we kind of started before the all the grunge stuff happened post Nirvana, we were signed to a major label in the wake of that. So people kind of lumped us in with grunge, which, you know, I don't think it's totally accurate. Also, grunge is kind of a vague term anyway. But, you know, alternative is kind of a catch-all because we're not really metal and we're not really punk, but we have elements of both of those things. And there's like some classic rock mixed in there. So yeah, alternative works as well as anything else, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And of that era and that genre, Rubberneck, obviously a massive album. And I'm wondering, having an album like that, what was the process, I guess, of trying to one up that? Like that's a no skip record. I think most people could agree. Like, you don't skip a track on it. So was it hard to one up that? Was it ever like a thought? Like, we're just going to keep rolling. Like, was that like such a thought with you guys when you came time for that next record?
I guess not at first, because after it came out, we were just on the road on tour for like 2 years straight, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But when we would get breaks in between there, we're record like one-off songs for like movie soundtracks or different compilations. The 90s were kind of known for all these different compilation albums. And so we would just, whatever the latest song that Vaden had come up with, let's go in the studio and record it. And they would place it in whatever movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then once the 2 years or so of being on tour for Rubberneck ended, that was really when we started thinking about our next album. And it was a long, drawn out process, really, because I think what our label wanted at the time was like Rubberneck 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't want to repeat ourselves. Plus, you know, it was never, I don't know how to put it, but it was never a plan like this is what we sound like or whatever. Right. It was just, a collection of songs, really. And so, you know, we started working on songs and it just seemed like forever. And finally, we went back in the studio, recorded a full album, like 15 songs. And then the label rejected that.
Mm.
I think they didn't hear another Possum Kingdom in that batch of songs. And, you know, they were never going to hear another Possum Kingdom. So, after they rejected that album, then we kind of went back to the drawing board and came up with another batch of songs and kind of took some of the ones that we'd already recorded and reworked them, and then threw in some other newer songs. Finally, you know, 7 years after Rubberneck came out, we finally released our second album. And by then, kind of any momentum we'd built up had kind of died out a little bit. So it was kind of frustrating that our label didn't seem to have any faith in us. That, you know, because they put out Rubberneck and really there was minimal promotion on their part. It was just the fact that we stayed out there on tour, and they would do, you know, some promotion, but it wasn't like a big push or anything like, we believe in these guys. They're going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
It was more like us just staying on the road with our nose to the grindstone. We were lucky enough to open up for some, you know, pretty popular bands like White Zombie, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Bush and stuff like that. So their fans got to see us, and momentum just built up over the course of these 2 years of touring. And so, you know, the album eventually went platinum, sold 1 million copies. And you would think that would buy us a little credit or something with our label, but it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like they were just done with us and go ahead and put this album out. And again, they didn't put much promotion into it. So we hit the road again. But it seems like we had just plateaued. Then our bass player quit. And it just kind of, the wind went out of our sails for a little bit. So we just called it quits for a few years.
Yeah. But like with all that, like adversity and stuff, it's very admirable when to see you guys like still put out new music though. Like I feel like, and you know, I'm no pro here, but just like from a fan's perspective, it's like, I feel like it might be really easy for a band like you guys, or, you know, whatever, like you see it a lot with the 80s bands, not talking shit. I like the hair metal stuff, but like it'd be easy to slap like the legacy act on it and just go out and play the hits or whatever. You know, like that whole kind of attitude, but like seeing you guys still put out records and like still tour like you guys, like I'm so excited for like these coming months. Like it's cool to see that there's still, or this, I don't know if this sounds bad, but there's still life there, you know. It's not just yeah, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it totally does. And I mean, we want to make it, you know, interesting for ourselves, so like we still enjoy playing all the old songs. And it's really cool seeing the response to, like, you know, Possum Kingdom and all the other songs from Rubberneck and stuff. But, like, you know, it'd be uninteresting to just keep playing the oldies, you know? Did I get disconnected?
Yeah. I just wanted to, before we got cut off there, Mark, I was just wanting to talk about real quick Possum Kingdom. Of course, I got to bring it up at least once. As a drummer myself, that has been like one of the songs that I grew up, like when I started to learn drums, that was the one I played. I love the groove. I love everything about it. And I'm kind of one, I've always wondered, what did you know, we're going to get a little drum nerdy here. What makes you know that you have like a good groove, a good beat, or how, whatever you would call it? Was that one of those songs where you're like, okay, this is flowing? Like, did it really hit you right away? Like, do you remember kind of coming up with that beat? Because I think it's one of those iconic, drum grooves, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. Actually, that was kind of, when I first auditioned for the Toadies, like they had been playing around the North Texas area, so I was already kind of a fan. All they had put out was like 1-2-song cassette. So I knew those two songs and then whatever I had heard live. So I got the audition when they were looking for a new drummer, and I assumed we would probably play the 2 songs on that cassette and then probably some of the live songs. So I showed up and I said, hey, I know the 2 songs from the tape and I kind of know some of the ones you play live. And Vaden, the singer, said, oh, we're not going to do any of that shit. He says, I got this new song I've been working on. And he kind of explained it to me and said, it's kind of weird. It has like a measure of 7 beats and then a measure of 8 beats. I'm not sure how to explain it. And so I think I said, well, why don't you guys just start playing what you got? And I'll hop in with something. So they started playing, and really what I played was just kind of, you know, trying to learn what's going on.
Yep.
So I played, you know, just kind of a simple beat that seemed to fit what they were doing. And really that's like the beat that the song still has now. So I guess whatever my first instinct was for the song is what they were looking for, you know?
Wow. So instant connection.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think a goal, you know, a lot of our songs have kind of weird time signatures and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to make it not sound weird. So that it might take you a few listens to realize, oh, that's not just 4/4. That's something else there, you know, and try and make it sound smooth and normal when in reality, you know, it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, it is. And that's exactly what I thought when I was in sixth grade trying to learn. I'm like, wait a minute, this is fucked up. but that's awesome, man. And nowadays, and we'll hop into the new album here coming up, but kind of going into that with, you know, just the change in times and how things have evolved in the studio and everything. I guess basically just like, what is your view on like when you go into record, like the changes in like equipment and different methods of recording and stuff like that? Is there a way you prefer like the old time, like it's that old, but like the older stuff versus like the newer stuff? I'm not a genius in the recording process, but maybe like, can you kind of give us like your opinion on the change in all that and how you guys evolved into it?
When we started, like when we recorded, you know, like, there's an EP called Pleather. And then before that, there was a cassette called Velvet that we recorded before Rubberneck. And so that was still in the sort of analog era, like on the 2-inch tape. And if there were any edits, it'd be done with a razor blade and Scotch tape, basically. And that's pretty much how Rubberneck was recorded. And then in between that and recording the album that never got released, the sort of digital revolution happened. So we recorded digitally. And as you know, as far as my, what I'm doing, I'm basically doing the same thing, you know, just playing the drums, but there were certain advantages to recording digitally as far as like if you do two takes of a song and the first half of one take is good and the second half of the second take is good. Digitally, it's really easy to splice them together, you know.
Sure.
But with this new album, we recorded it with Steve Albini, the late great Steve Albini, and he's pretty much totally analog. So yep. It was kind of back to the beginning, and he would record direct to 2-inch tape, and then if there was an edit or something, he would just hop up from his chair and go over to the reel with a razor blade and just cut out the chunk that we didn't need and tape them back together. So, it's kind of, it's cool going back to that method. And I think there's something, like it's almost, I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I can feel it. Like it just sounds better. It's richer sounding, yeah. More depth there. So, it, recording that way, like, and all of us were kind of recording all at the same time rather than, you know, piecemeal, like, let's do the drums and then overdub the guitars and stuff. We kind of, every song was like recorded live, and we would, you know, after we would record a take, then we'd go listen to it and it's like, that's pretty good. Or I think we can beat it. And we'd go back until we got one we liked. So I really enjoyed that method, but you got to be on your toes because, you know, if one person makes a mistake, then everybody has to stop and start over again, you know? So it kind of, it put a little pressure on it, but it was a good kind of pressure that, I think kept all of us on our toes and kind of brought out the best in each of us, you know, trying not to let each other down, but also at the same time, trying to kind of impress each other. Like,
yeah,
you know, it was fun. It was a blast is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'd imagine it puts that spark into it. You know what I mean? Like, to really keep on the toes. And, the Charmer obviously is what we're talking about. The upcoming album. And I'd like to hit on that more. Can you kind of give us, just like, how was it working with Steve Albini? He's obviously a legend. Like, how was it working with him?
It was great. I was pretty intimidated the first couple days in the studio just because I've been such a fan of so many of the albums he's recorded, you know, from the Pixies, PJ Harvey, Nirvana, and so on, Jesus Lizard and whatnot. So I was a little intimidated, but after we'd been there like a day or two, it was just like hanging out with anybody, and we're, you know, telling fart jokes and and laughing it up and stuff like that. And, yeah, he's, you know, he was pretty much a down to earth normal guy, you know, just like anybody that you would be recording with, kind of.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he was fast and he was, he would be blunt in his criticism of something, but it was great, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I guess, can you tell us what to expect from the record from your standpoint, what we have in store for us at all? What can we expect?
I think there's 13 songs total. They're all kind of varied in their, you know, content, sort of. It's not all just one sound. Like, there's slower songs, or even a few like quieter moments. There's some loud, heavy, fast songs. There's some that might remind you of older songs of ours with that kind of Texas blues based boogie swing feel to them. And there's other ones that might sound like a total coming out of left field. Like, there's one song that was sort of inspired by the band Boston.
Okay.
Which is kind of unusual for us, but you know, we kind of all grew up in that era of classic rock and stuff, and Boston is one of Vaden's favorites. So he had this song that we worked up, and on the way home from the studio one day, we're riding in this Uber back to our hotel, and Vaden turned to me and said, I can't believe we got Albini to record a Boston song. it's kind of a different sound for us on that song. But even with all that said, you know, it sounds like the Toadies. You're right. Not going to mistake it for anybody else, really.
Hell yeah. Yeah. And that's, I'm so excited for it. And that's what I was about to say. Like, you guys could try any kind of style, and I feel like what you just said there, like, you'll know when it's the Toadies. And I think that's what makes bands great. They could try all this different shit, and it's, you still know who it is. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think that's like the key, I think. But Mark, thanks so much for hopping on. This was awesome. But before we go, is there anything else? I know you, a comic writer. I know that's something you're into. Is there anything else aside from Toadies that you're up to? Like what are you up to with the other stuff?
Yeah, I have this comic. It was like a 4-issue series that's been compiled into a graphic novel. So it's called Buzzkill, and that'll be available at the merch booth. It's been out a while, but not everybody knows that that I did that. I co-wrote it, co-created it. So yeah, I've been trying to work up another comic series. Just messing around with ideas, coming up with outlines, trying to figure it out. I'm hoping to start work on a book kind of about a little bit of the history of the Toadies and maybe my personal history and stuff like that. That's sort of still in the planning stages, but hopefully in the next couple of years, that might be something that's out there. Yeah, and other than that, I'm just trying to eat my Wheaties and take my vitamins so I can maintain the grind of 6 months on tour.
Right on, right on. And we're glad you guys are going to be out there again. Can't wait for The Charmer either. That is out May 1st, I believe. So everyone definitely make sure to check that out. I know I will. Mark, thanks a lot. Everyone make sure to, you know, Toadies on website, social media, all under the Toadies. Also check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. You'll Google us and you'll find us too. So thanks so much for listening. Thank you again, Mark. This was great. And we'll see you guys next time.
All right. Thank you. My boots would look good on your bed. And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night. So why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight?